With SDPB News, I'm John Nguyen. South Dakota Department of Health officials report 104 new COVID-19 cases and another death. The statewide total is 1,858 COVID-19 cases. That total includes 9 deaths, 111 hospitalizations, and 824 people who fully recovered. 87 of the new cases are in Minnehaha County. Other counties with case increases are Brown, Davison, Hughes, and Turner. Minnehaha County officials are looking at options for a recovery center for homeless people awaiting COVID-19 test results. Currently, 4 hotels have housed homeless individuals waiting for the results. The County Human Services Director says if a test comes back negative, the person is cleared to return to a shelter. If they test positive, they're housed at the hotels until they're cleared by the Department of Health or a health care provider. About 35 to 40 people have been housed for some period of time at one of the hotels, 24 of whom have ended up testing positive. Health officials have been talking with the Union Gospel Mission and the Bishop Dudley House to identify possible locations for a recovery center. 2 South Dakota racetracks plan to open their doors to fans this weekend, despite fears of spreading the coronavirus. Local officials who want to stop the races say they can't. Governor Kristi Noem says she won't. SDPB's Seth Tupper reports.
The new Raceway Park is a dirt track a few miles from North Sioux City. Dennis Moore is a race promoter. He's hosting car races on Sunday, and he plans to let 500 people in to watch.
We were told that we could do it by the sheriff's department because we went through them, and they're saying it's okay. And then now we've got some individuals in town that are doing some complaining about it, and I don't know why it affects them. If they don't want to come, they wouldn't have to.
As an outdoor venue, it's unclear if state restrictions that limit the number of people inside a business could restrict the racetracks. Dennis Moore says he's taking precautions at the weekend event. His park will make fans wear face masks and have their temperatures checked. Moore's isn't the only track having races this weekend. 700 fans are expected down the road at Park Jefferson International Speedway. Both tracks are limiting the number of tickets sold to allow for social distancing inside the venue. No one from Park Jefferson responded to messages for this story, but the track's website says it will follow government coronavirus guidelines. That's of little comfort to Mayor Randy Fredrickson in North Sioux City. He fears the races could undermine the city's efforts to fight COVID-19. But he's powerless to stop the races. That's because the tracks are several miles outside city limits.
My phone's rang off the hook over this. I really don't have no say in it.
Union County officials say they also lack the power to stop the races. County Commissioner Rich Headed blames the legislature. He says a bill that lawmakers rejected last month would have given county commissioners extra powers in a public health crisis.
We're in a jam right now. If that would have got passed, we could have acted on this. But unfortunately, we got to follow the laws. We can't make up the laws as we go.
Headed and Fredrickson both say they're looking to the governor's office for help. But Governor Kristi Noem says she won't step in, regardless of the power she may have. During a news conference, Noem said repeatedly she's encouraging race fans to stay home. But she won't go any further.
I'm going to continue to recommend that people not go. That will be the course of action that I'll be taking.
The new Raceway Park is selling tickets. Park Jefferson Speedway says on Facebook that its event is already sold out. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Seth Tupper in Rapid City.
A handful of pork processing plants in the upper Midwest are closed after COVID-19 cases infected their workforce. Crews will clean and disinfect plants in South Dakota and Minnesota with no clear word on when they might reopen. As SDPB's Lee Strubinger reports, the moves will affect farmers at every level of the pork industry.
Adam Krause has a barn full of piglets at his nursery operation near Clear Lake, South Dakota. He's farmed with his dad for years and now has an operation of his own. Krause contracts with a company that owns the piglets. When they reach a certain size, they move to a different facility. But some major Midwestern meatpacking plants have shut down temporarily to respond to COVID-19 outbreaks. That's creating ripples throughout the industry. The more days a plant is offline, the bigger the ripple.
What might happen is we're going to get a smaller sow herd, not as many piglets being born. And eventually, looking down the line, there may not be as many pig spaces needed.
The Smithfield Foods meatpacking plant in Sioux Falls had one of the hottest outbreaks of COVID-19 cases in the country. There's still no indication when that plant will reopen. The JBS plant in Worthington, Minnesota, an hour east of Sioux Falls, is also closing its doors. Both plants slaughter 20,000 hogs a day. Glenn Muller is the executive director of South Dakota Pork Producers Council. He says the JBS closing will have a strong impact on South Dakota pork producers.
With the proximity to South Dakota, there's a substantial amount of hogs that are being harvested at the Worthington plant that originate from South Dakota. And so this just kind of compounds the issue of hogs are getting to a heavier weight, and we're having a more difficult time getting them entered into the food chain because of the fact that we've lost another harvesting facility.
Seaboard Triumph, a meatpacking plant in Sioux City, has confirmed two cases of COVID-19, but hasn't closed its doors yet. This kind of slowdown creates a tremendous backlog in the supply of animals. South Dakota has more than 750,000 hogs at more than 140 hog barns permitted by the state. Not all hog barns need a state permit. Farmers see limitations in their butchering options, especially hog farmers in East River. Lee Scholes is a livestock economist with the Iowa State University Extension Office. He says every day processing plants are offline, the supply backs up.
We look at the hog industry, bottlenecks and backlogs are particularly acute because the hog industry relies on a continuous flow of hogs. And so when you have market-ready hogs, they need to go to market because there's feeder animals right behind them that need those finishing spaces.
Scholes says if only one plant in the region closed, the industry could adjust. But when multiple plants are affected, it leads to a slowdown across the board. Because of that, hogs are staying on the farm, which has other consequences. The price for market-ready hogs is down. Scholes says the outlook for feeder hogs, those in line right after hogs in finishing barns, is even worse.
In a situation like this, you can see those prices go to effectively zero because there's no place to put those hogs. And that's what we've seen here is those animals have approached zero value because there's no place to continue them in the supply chain.
In an effort to address that supply chain issue, an executive order from Governor Kristi Noem lifts penalties for farmers with more animals than their permits allow.
These folks have been absolutely devastated by the situation we see where they were planned to, where they had contracts, and where they were going to be hauling their hogs the next several weeks has completely been dried up and eliminated.
Noem says the state is working with the CDC to reopen the Smithfield plant. She says a report from a recent federal inspection should be released soon. Livestock economist Scholes says letting farmers keep more animals is only a short-term solution. He says that works for younger animals, but
as those animals become larger and closer to market weight, that becomes much more difficult. So that's certainly the short-term, I don't want to say solution, but one way to help in the delay of those marketings is to stock those buildings more densely.
As for hog farmer Adam Krause, he's taking it one day at a time.
It's hard to make sound economic decisions on how to move forward, especially in our industry, which is so tightly pipelined with futures and numbers in mind.
Krause says he'll have to move forward without that timeline in mind. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
Healthcare workers are essential during a pandemic to keep up with increasing numbers of patients, but hospitals around the country and in South Dakota are laying off hospital staff. SDPB's Seth Tupper explains why.
Workers at more than 170 U.S. hospitals or health systems have lost their jobs. That includes the Avera and Monument health systems in South Dakota. The layoffs come despite $100 billion in a congressional package for hospitals. Mark Thompson is the CFO for Monument Health in Rapid City. Monument's share of that congressional support equaled $16 million.
Was nowhere close to enough to offset the losses from the lost revenue and increased expenses.
Like other providers, Monument has shut down elective surgeries and other routine activities to create space for COVID-19 patients. At the same time, there are fewer patients at clinics and emergency rooms. Even with congressional funding, Thompson says they expect to bring in $30 million less than expected this fiscal year. At the same time, Thompson says, providers are spending more money. They're buying personal protective equipment, outfitting extra space for COVID patients, and making telehealth improvements.
At one hand, we were pumping the brakes because the volumes were, you know, declining. On the other hand, we're pushing the accelerator because we were planning for expected surge capacity that we've been talking about for the last several weeks.
More help is on the way from Congress. A bill working its way to the president's desk this week includes another $75 billion for hospitals. But Thompson says he doesn't know what Monument's share will be or if it'll help them bring hospital staff back to work. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Seth Tupper in Rapid City.
Some headlines of the coronavirus offer hope that positive environmental changes will continue after the pandemic and mitigate global warming. Other headlines say a change in individual behavior isn't enough. A Black Hills environmentalist agrees. Lilius Jarding tells SDPB's Victoria Wicks that individual behavior must be guided by public policy.
Lilius Jarding knows firsthand how much work it is to live green.
I've canned, frozen, and dried food for 40-some years, grown most of my own vegetables, most of my own fruit. And when I lived in the country, we would raise livestock, not a whole lot of livestock like a rancher, but, you know, we would have a flock of chickens and three or four lambs, something like that.
Lilius Jarding holds a PhD in political science and has experience in public policy spanning 45 years. It sounds like a desk job, but she understands the value of what gardeners call dirt therapy.
If I balance it out, spending my time outside on a nice sunny day, working in the garden, smelling the earth compared to spending money and the time to earn that money and the resources that are involved. To me, a garden is a wonderful activity, and it's a matter of priorities.
Jarding says individual action can have positive results on the environment and on quality of life. If you have space for a garden, grow some of your own food. If you don't have garden space, you can grow herbs indoors. Shop at grocers that offer bulk foods and organic produce, and in the summer, hit the farmers' markets. Put up a clothesline and dry clothes outside when weather permits. Build a compost pile to turn garbage into plant food. Reuse plastic bags and jars for food storage.
If you are drying spices or fruit or zucchinis, we dry our zucchinis because they don't freeze very well. If you can reduce your food packaging, that is an important resource conservation activity.
Jarding says disposable food packaging is one of the major contributors to waste. And she says waste is a major factor in global warming.
You know, if you look at the overall problem, if you really look at the big picture, anytime most things are manufactured, there are carbon emissions involved. So I think of the environmental issue broadly written as a waste reduction issue. And waste reduction means not just that you learn how to throw less in the garbage can, burning fossil fuels for transportation. If you do less of that, it's a waste reduction issue. Using less water. If you do that, there are less chemicals that need to be used at the water plant, less energy that needs to be used to pump the water around, less that needs to be done to treat the water after it's been used.
Jarding says reducing material reduces the amount of pollution put into the atmosphere. For example, there are more materials in a big vehicle than in a small one, so a small car, or better yet, a bicycle, reduces greenhouse gas in more ways than one. But she says don't go buy an electric car unless you first do some research.
If the electric car is plugged in to a power source that is renewable energy, it is probably a net gain. If the car is plugged into a utility that is using coal-fired power plants or nuclear power plants, there's probably not a net gain.
Jarding says consumers need to think of a product's life cycle before making an assumption that it's better for the planet. Another consideration is the concept of environmental justice. Where was the product made and who made it? Did the workers earn fair wages? Was child labor used? Were trees uprooted, water polluted, habitats endangered, local populations pushed aside? Jarding says these considerations are essential to guarding against environmental injustice, a concept first studied in the 1980s.
When people started doing the research, they found out that communities of color were much more impacted by dirty industry.
As an example, Jarding cites uranium mining in the earliest days of nuclear industries making nuclear weapons. She says that mining still affects reservations and treaty lands today. And she gives another example.
Chemical industries, which are dangerous and potentially deadly to the communities that surround them, were primarily cited in African-American communities.
Lilias Jarding refers frequently to the need for research, but not everyone has the time or the inclination to make environmental protection a life's work. That's one problem public policy can solve. Let's go back to the coronavirus pandemic. Some countries took a top-down approach to shutting down. Others, like the United States, left the decision to the states. In South Dakota, in the absence of a statewide shutdown, some towns, including Rapid City, closed down non-essential businesses and places where crowds gather. These decisions have been based, to various degrees, on research. Governmental and private sector scientists around the globe have worked fast to assess the danger and try to understand what will have to happen to resolve this crisis. Jarding says a similar response could mitigate the climate crisis, which is arriving much more slowly, but with the potential for far more devastation. Public policy can focus individual action into collective effort, and she says that action does not come only from the federal level. Jarding serves on Rapid City's Sustainability Committee, so she should know. She says municipalities can increase solid waste fees for people who throw away more trash, which encourages waste reduction. The city can look at its own operations, the efficiency of trash and recycling collection, and the fuel used for public transportation and city-owned vehicles. At the state level, she says the legislature can pass laws mandating energy efficiency for automobiles, as California has done.
States can mandate solid waste standards, recycling standards, mining laws, water quality to some extent. The federal government has a Clean Water Act, but states implement that.
And she says states can legislate incentives for renewable energy. One perennial failed effort in the South Dakota legislature is net metering, setting a fair price for energy generated by solar panels or wind generators on private homes or farms.
If someone generates more electricity than they need, they can feed it back through the wires so that it's used by the utility.
Jarding says state laws can decide the location of transmission lines and make it easier or harder to site large-scale wind and solar generators. The headlines now are full of fear and hope. Fear because we don't know the full extent of the immediate existential threat, and hope because the almost 8 billion human inhabitants of the planet have shown they are capable of functioning together, at least for a while, to protect the health and safety of each other with immediate results. We hear in news stories that people are eager for life to get back to normal. But environmentalists like Lilias Jarding are hoping for a better normal to emerge, guided by public policies that preserve the inadvertent greening brought about by this global crisis. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City.
Those are the stories from today. Be sure to follow SDPB News on Twitter and Facebook, and check out sdpb.org to read up on all of our news and politics coverage. Be sure to share this podcast with your friends. Together we can make a more civically engaged South Dakota. From the entire SDPB journalism team, I'm Josh Heyer. Thank you for listening.